Next up, we are continuing with our academia here today with Professor Keith Hall. Professor Hall is the Nesser Family Chair in Energy Law at Louisiana State University, where he serves as Director of the Mineral Law Institute and as Director of the Energy Law Center. He teaches mineral rights, international petroleum transactions, civil law property, and energy law and regulation. He is the co-author of three books on oil and gas law and many shorter publications. He has taught energy law classes as a visiting professor in Azerbaijan and a visiting professor at the University of Pittsburgh and as adjunct professor at Loyola School of Law. He currently serves as the editor-in-chief of the Institute for Energy Law's Oil and Gas e-Report and has served on the executive committee of the Energy and Mineral Law Foundation, the board of directors of the Foundation for Natural Resources and Energy Law, what we all used to call, and probably most of us still do call, the Rocky Mountain Mineral Law Foundation. Before joining LSU in 2012 as faculty, he practiced at a major law firm in New Orleans and also worked as a chemical engineer in the petrochemical industry. Please welcome Professor Hall. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you. Good to be here for the UT event. Always enjoy speaking every other year at the fundamentals. So what we're going to talk about is implied covenants in oil and gas leases. And a topic I find really interesting, fascinating. It's one of the first subjects on which I wrote law review articles. What I want to talk about is, first, what are implied covenants? Make sure we're on the same page what they are. What do they basically do, and why do they exist? And then we can talk about what some of the main implied covenants that you see in the cases. Maybe then some other implied covenants that might exist. And then some Lagniappe issues, a little something extra from the guy from Louisiana. And so that's basically the plan. So what are implied covenants? Well, a covenant is a promise, a contractual obligation. And so an implied covenant is one that's not written in the contract. It is merely implied. The courts hold that it exists, but it's not written, at least not in express terms in the lease. And these are going to be binding on the leaseholder, the lessee. These are not obligations for the lessor. And so what do they generally do? I think of them as saying that the leaseholder has to be reasonably active, has to not sit on its hands, and has to go do something, assuming that a reasonably prudent operator would be doing something. So why do implied covenants exist? Well, the main benefit that the lessor is hoping to get out of the lease, a lot of commentators and courts have said, is the hope for the lessor's royalty. Occasionally you see leases and places where you get fairly high bidding for bonuses, but mainly you're thinking about the royalty. But whether there's a lessor's royalty paid, and if so, how much, is going to depend on, in part, how active the lessee is. Is it drilling wells? If it finds something, does it further develop that proven formation, assuming you've got a leasehold big enough to need more than one well? Are you diligently marketing product? Are you protecting the lease premises against drainage if there's a well on the neighboring property that's draining the lease premises? These things will determine in part how much of a royalty there is. But the typical lease doesn't contain much, if anything, that's binding on the lessee as far as what the lessee has to do. And there's probably good reason for that. When the lease is granted, there often you may not have done seismic yet. You don't know what's there. And so it'd be hard to define in detail what the lessee should do. So there's good reason you have it defined in detail. But it leaves the lessor sort of at the mercy of the lessee being reasonably diligent. I mean, imagine, for an analogy outside the oil and gas context, if you wrote the next great American novel and you signed up with a publisher, gave them the exclusive rights to publish, and your editor is very enthusiastic, and you're dreaming that you're going to be the next John Grisham or whatever, and before they start the promotion campaign, your editor takes another job, the new editor's not so enthusiastic, and they authorize like a $10 budget for advertising your great novel. Maybe they buy one ad on in the middle of the night on Google or something.